a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Scholarship money. Who couldn't use that?
Absolutely. If you're a student here at the University of Michigan.
So parents, you know, that are listening.
That can go a long way. And all you got to do is come on out to our event this afternoon. Hub Ann Arbor, the newest and best in off-campus housing for students here in Ann Arbor. Just this seemed, if you went to Michigan in the 90s, or certainly before that, Craig, this kind of. This
90s. I was already old in the 90s.
Right, that's what I said before that. I didn't say when. I just said before that. It would be unfathomable the amenities that they have in these rooms. Like flat screen TVs in every room, right?
They didn't have flat screen TVs.
They didn't. I know they didn't, but still, the equivalent of flat screen TVs in every room. They have workout facilities. I mean, it's just this is. These accommodations are second to none in all of Ann Arbor. You need to come on out to Hub this afternoon. Ira and I will be out there from 3:30 to 5:30. The office is across the street from the MDN. It's like next to Red Hawk. You come on out. You have the address over there, Mr. Weintraub?
State Street between William and Liberty.
There you go. With the bus, our van will be out front.
You will not be able
to
miss
us. You will not miss it. And the big thing that we'll be giving away is the $7,000 scholarship. So we'll be taking entries all the way up until we draw the name at 5 p.m. You do not want to miss it. So come on out to Hub Ann Arbor, the newest and best in off-campus housing for students here in Ann Arbor. All right. So, guys, the MGO Blog Roundtable is here. We have Craig Ross, the venerable one. How are you doing? And also a curmudgeon. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. You know, rumor has it that Brian Cook is a person who chose the piped in music this week.
What?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Rumor has it that you had a telegraph in your dorm room.
that might be true.
That's Brian Cook, who you all know.
Incensed.
MGOBlue.com, excuse me. Then, of course, we have Ed Fang. I say MGOBlue a lot. Yeah. And then we have Ed Fang. Ed, what's up?
Not so much. I'm doing great. I don't know how Craig Ross can say anything bad about Brian Cook when he looks so dapper in the studio this morning.
I mean, yeah, Brian.
This is the first time I've seen Brian.
He just looks good.
I've never seen Brian in a collared shirt before.
I wear this a lot.
But I've never seen you in a collared shirt before.
Well, you just haven't been looking
at
me.
Do you have a tie?
No. Yes.
Yeah. You do have it.
All right.
And he has pants on.
I have to go to weddings.
Okay.
I mean, he's got a collared shirt and pants.
But I'm still an engineer, people.
So what made you look so spiffy for us today?
I just literally put on a shirt because it's a little chilly. That's it.
No, it's the utmost respect for Craig Ross here.
I have no respect for Craig Ross. I mean, especially after he's like starting off the radio with like, "You're Special K." That's my name for the guy who's the DJ, Special K.
So, what was up with, was there something with the piped in music last week or something?
Well,
it was wretched.
It's always wretched. I don't know
what. It was even more wretched. I mean,
it was a little wedding DJ.
So I don't know.
Crawford scores, and then they play "I Dropped a Bomb on You" or whatever that song is.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of funky. I like that because it's not like, you know, Nickelback. And then my cousin is like, it's kind of like on the nose, isn't it? I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah, it is. So. I don't know what your problem was.
They played Bruno Mars at one point. I know I saw that on a big screen.
That guy's short.
Yeah, he is.
Craig, what's your problem with the Python?
What's your problem with short people?
I have no problem with short people. But, you know, it would be better if they played Short People by Randy Newman than any of the other stuff.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what that is?
Well, the students really seem to like, the only piped in music I noticed because they were playing on the big screen was the Bruno Mars.
I mean, they have a band. Number one, they have a band.
They do, yeah.
I mean,
this is what it was like, and like ever since they changed it.
And two, I mean, if
you want only band, you don't want any piped in music.
I mean, You could play at the beginning, say, okay, the game, Pump It Up by Elvis Costello. That would be good.
Is this like an age divide here? Because the students seem like they're having a blast, you know, with the band and the piped in music.
You know, I don't mind it in some amount these days, but I'm resigned to it in some amount. But what is this?
That's
what is going on,
Randy Newman.
Well, who is Randy Newman?
Oh, hey, come on, man.
You think they should play this at a game?
Well, not really, but I think they should. I mean, it would be better.
What is this piano crap?
This is a song about racism.
Okay, it has a message, but it doesn't get you fired up for a game.
This sounds...
No, but so Pump It Up by Elvis Costello.
This sounds like a sitcom.
No.
I'm just a DJ for Craig this morning.
Why is Special K like ruining my hour on the radio now? This is bad.
I wish I had never said that.
Had you ever heard Uptown Funk before, Craig? Had you ever heard Uptown Funk before?
No.
You apparently not.
I don't listen to that stuff. It hurts my head. It hurts my head.
I think even you could bop your head to Uptown Funk.
I think they're trying to find a happy medium. They're obviously not. Tradition.
They just have a wedding DJ.
Tradition. They are always going to cater to tradition first. The band is always going to be the premium, the draw, the attraction, the show.
They don't get to play anymore. They get to play like at between quarters, and then every commercial break, it's like, okay, I'm gonna play 5 minutes of Mr. Brightside, which apparently is a ubiquitous song. I had no idea it's a killer song. Do you know about Mr. Brightside?
What's Mr. Brightside?
See, exactly. So they played it, and then they stopped playing it, and the entire student section knew the chorus,
okay,
and they sang the chorus, and I'm like, what is going on?
So I mean, look, man, you know, guys, I think that's where we are. I mean, you have a stadium full of tradition and people who love tradition and are always going to cater to that. But then you got this student section that's like, hey, you know, some of this current stuff, some of the piped in stuff is appealing to them. And they want to get them fired up.
Like I guess that's fine to some extent, but it's too far. Like, I'd like to hear the band a little bit. And they need to remic the band, because where I'm at, so much old man stuff right now. I turn into Craig Ross.
We aren't even talking about the game. Thanks, Craig.
I know. I think that's Craig's point of bringing this up.
It was a misdirection, you know, kind of distraction.
You never know with the Craig Ross.
I didn't bring it up.
You did not. It was all Craig Ross. It's all Craig Ross. So, okay, so Michigan, they did win the game, right?
Yeah, this must be a fun week on the radio.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God. Tuesday, we spent a lot of time with analysis on Monday. So in fairness to the fan base, I guess there wasn't a ton of opportunity for calls that day.
Yeah.
But Tuesday, the entire show was about Wilton Speight.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The thing is, Craig got an email last week about how we did not talk about Speight at all, even though he completed about 44% of his passes. And I thought that was interesting because, you know,
we did talk about Speight.
I mean, briefly. Yeah. Briefly.
We didn't really talk about it.
We talked about his interceptions. I remember we had a whole thing on it.
Well, we didn't talk about it enough for this gentleman.
Apparently, yeah, no, I think because I forwarded that to you, didn't I? Yeah, I got at least one email complaining we hadn't talked about Wilton.
Well, we did talk about Wilton, but so, okay.
He wasn't as bad this week as, I mean, in the he was 17 of 29, really 18 of 29, because the one pass was caught. I mean, it's amazing how replay officials can routinely.
They're all as old as you, Craig.
Well, I know, but even with a bit of replay, that's the thing that gets you. You'd think if you were hiring replay officials, you'd have like one criteria, eyesight.
Yeah.
You'd think that would be high on the list. And apparently it isn't. So 18 of 29 is 62%, a little more. That's not terrible. He didn't have a terrible game throwing the ball. I don't get any impression that he doesn't understand what's going on in the field or that there's, you know, now.
That's the last thing.
Yeah, the fumbles were bad. But I think the second one, Harbaugh said the second one was a problem with the play design.
No, he didn't say that.
Yes, he did. I was standing right next to him. He said the problem with the
offense. Well, he said that a little bit, but he also said that. Like, he wants it at the belt level, and he didn't get it at the belt level. Got kind of thrown into his chest plate.
I thought the wide receiver was a little quick to the, you know, I thought
he would, that's not like, no.
In any event, I mean, I agree it's on Spate, but I also think the wide receiver had some culpability on that. And Harbaugh on that one said the play design isn't good and they think they have it fixed. And so now the first one was ridiculous and all 100%, you know, Spate on the one on the goal line. I mean, I agree, but he can't make those kinds of mistakes.
And that's a touchdown.
Like, oh, yeah.
They'd caved in the left side
of
the
line.
Yeah,
you pointed that out on your UFR.
He's in. So I think those cost Michigan at least like 7 points, more, maybe 11 if they punch in. They're on the Cincinnati 30 and they're driving when he has the jet sweep issue. And you put those points on the board and this game feels entirely different throughout the whole of it. And the thing is that going to continue? I mean, these aren't things that we've seen from Spate. We saw the one in the Ohio State game and we saw the two here, but all last year we didn't have, a single other snap issue. Mm-hmm. So...
And look, apparently it's something that they had taken notice of in practice because Jim was pretty, he's pretty matter of fact about saying, hey, you know, I've been telling him in practice, two hands on the ball. We've been emphasizing it. And today we had the consequence. So we go back to practice and say, see, this is why I said that. And this was like right after the game where he's. You know, he is always he makes it a point to emphasize the positives that everyone has put forth the critiquing. He'll do some of it for public consumption, but most of it is left for the team. But when he offers it that, you know, with that in that matter of fact way, it was very clear that he was perturbed by it. Because it's something that he had focused on before, or that they as a staff had focused on before. He says, hey, this is going to get back. But that, to me, it gets back to this is a mental mistake and not a physical. I mean, it's a physical mistake. And what's the way? It is a correctable mistake because it's a mental mistake. You can correct that one. The physical ones, like some of the ones we saw where a guy can't get to that block. He can't run. He can't make it to that point. He can't complete that pass because it's out there. It wasn't one of those physical issues. It was a mental issue that he said, hey, we're going to correct two hands on the football.
Yeah, and so that's one of his problems, and I think that is very clearly going to get corrected. And then the second problem is that occasionally he throws it 6 feet over a guy's head.
Yeah.
And we've seen enough of that I think that's probably just going to continue.
Mm-hmm. But was that the case last year?
Yeah, I mean, like, remember the beginning of the Rutgers game when he couldn't hit the side of a barn? So there are...
But was that the rule? Was that the rule last year?
It wasn't the rule, but it was far from uncommon. So Spate had a tendency to kind of, like, start games poorly and then kind of get a rhythm and then he'd get going. And he also, like, had these periods, like in the Iowa game and in the Colorado game, where he just was off. And I think he was kind of a roller coaster last year, and you kind of hope as a second-year starter that you get less of that. And I think we will still see less of that, but I think he's probably going to be kind of an up-and-down guy for.
See, I guess what I remember, you're right, the Colorado game, he was. I mean, that was an off game for him. He took that big hit, and obviously that kind of colored the rest of the game. But after that, we saw him go on a nice little run, and the thing that, to me, kind of highlighted those performances was his ability to make plays after he eluded the rush.
Yeah.
He's not doing that as well this year as he did in that span.
Lost too much weight.
I don't know what it is. I can't explain why. He kind of talked about it. He said, you know, it's his feet, and he isn't getting his feet reset in a way that allows him to throw accurately. But my point is we've seen him do that in the past, and we saw him do it for a pretty significant stretch, enough of a stretch to me where there should be some optimism that he could at least get back to where he was last year, which for that span was pretty good.
I mean, there was a four-game stretch after the bye week where he was on fire, and then, you know, the Iowa game happened, and then we don't really have any clean data from the rest of the year because of his shoulder.
Right.
But, you know, he was kind of iffy against Wisconsin. He was kind of iffy against Penn State. He was definitely iffy against Colorado. So that's a big chunk of his year. I think it's one of those things where it could go either way. The thing that kind of jumps out to me is that he is in total command of this offense. I chart all the throws. I don't have one bad read through 2 weeks. And one of those defenses was an excellent defense. So So the things that he's making errors in, it's just like throwing the ball at people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, to me, that's more fixable than the stuff that the other guys have, where it's like they don't know what they're seeing. They have bad pocket presence. They don't have confidence in where people are lining up. I mean, Michigan had a third and one in this game where he's waving a wide receiver up to the line of scrimmage before they quick snap. And that's the kind of thing that this offense in particular needs, because they have so many young players.
Or the play that Grant Perry talked about, the touchdown, where he said, you know, I stepped to the line of scrimmage pre-snap. Ball's going to the tight end. He said, you know, I can see that as a receiver. That's where the ball is going to go. And as I'm running my route and I see it opening up, it's like, oh, man, if he, you know, throw it to me. And so he makes eye contact with Wilton. And Wilton comes off. I think the tight end was bunting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Comes off of bunting and throws it to Grant Perry, and it winds up being six. It's, yeah. You know, between the chemistry that those two had, the eye contact chemistry, and then the recognition for Wilton, to your point, Brian, I think that is the distinguishing characteristic, yeah. The command,
yeah.
Of the offense, yeah. The progression reading. He's just on a different level than his competition right now.
And yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, and I just think we just need to recognize the variance in where these passes go, right? I mean, you know, he's clearly had some bad games last year. Like, and if you try to go through and predict on each play whether the ball is going to sail 10 feet over the head or whether he's going to get it right on the money on that Perry touchdown, you're not going to be able to do that. And I just want to remind everyone, 2 years ago, we thought Jake Rudock was terrible through six games.
We did.
He was terrible through six games.
And you know, maybe he got better over the second half of the season, or maybe he just had a lot of bad throws in the first half, and he got it together the rest of the season. I think there's just a lot of variance in quarterbacks throwing, and we need to get to a break.
But I guess the thing as we get to the break that I want you guys to chew on and answer when we come back is, how much stock do you put in Jim Harbaugh's ability to improve guys? Is that to you more fluff than substance? It seems like some fans are starting to feel that way, because, I mean, Jim Harbaugh is telling you this is the guy. And yet you still hear people saying, hey, it's time to put in another guy. That's totally contradictory to what we hear from Harbaugh when he talks about a meritocracy and all the things he's done with QB development in the past. So what do you think about that? How much stock do you put and his ability and Pep's ability to get Wilton back to the point, at least, that he was at last year? We'll get to your takes on that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
I'm doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. It started out with a kiss.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com.
So now the whole student section is singing along to this song. It's a good song. I like it, but it's old. I'm surprised.
This hypes you up.
Well, it's the
man. Hey, give me some Phil Collins.
I didn't seem like a stadium song to me. No.
Give me some In the Air Tonight. Give me some of that.
Apparently, if you're at Rick's, you're gonna hear this song. Like, at some point during the night, this song's, and then like everybody's.
But you won't remember it then.
Well, no. Maybe that's why people like it so much, because they don't get tired of it.
I guess. What genre would you call it?
That's the first time I ever
rock.
Heard it.
Rock? Alternative rock or rock?
It's part of AAA.
Alternative rock is like Nirvana.
No, it's part of AAA. It's from our sister station, so it's a AAA song, adult rock something.
Yeah, it's indie-ish. I mean, the Killers were kind of, I don't know, they're kind of in between. Anyway.
Okay. I don't know.
What? They are.
Football!
What I do know football. Is, wait, before we get to that, though, our friends at Suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor, I mean, you can choose your own music. Whatever music you like to hear, you can dial it up in there. You want to hear the band on loop? Just, hey, hook it up inside your 2017 Chevy Silverado four-wheel drive LT double cab, $134 per month, with $995 down, or sign and drive for $249 per month. You can get into a 2017 Chevy Cruze LT for $135 per month with $995 down, or sign and drive for $233 per month for 24 months. Last but certainly not least, the 2017 Chevy Traverse 1LT, that 7-passenger crossover, can be leased for $139 per month with $995 down, or sign and drive for $243 per month for 24 months. For those and other great lease deals, make it on down to Suburban Chevrolet Cadillac in Ann Arbor and make the choice. So, guys, before we went to the break, you know, I put the question to you guys about the Jim Harbaugh effect. And I, you know, I admit to being a totally biased source, total absolute faith in their ability, his and Pep Hamilton's ability to nurture a quarterback. I don't think it's blind faith. I think it's based on some substance. I think there's data to that shows that these guys know what they're doing when it comes to nurturing quarterbacks. Is that history not applicable here when we're talking about Wilton Spate, or do you think Wilton is what he is?
I think there is some aspect of that, that he is what he is. Harbaugh likes guys who can move. Wilton really can't move. We saw the zone keeper where it's like, good job getting that 5 yards and never do that again.
But he got 5 yards, man.
Yes, he did. But
he got a first down last in Florida.
I know, but he's not. He's not a guy who's going to go get 500 yards in a season. I do think that the scattershot is kind of baked in at this point. Now, they've done a great job prepping him to be a college quarterback. He's in command of the offense. And the scattershot, honestly, wasn't that bad. I only had 4 passes for him that were marked inaccurate. Now, there's some that are kind of in a gray area between, but that's not that bad. I think that he's a guy who, if he cuts out the touchdown per game, he's handing the opposition. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Right.
He's a totally different guy. Well, it's too late for him now. He's John Navarre now for the fan base.
Right.
And I bring this up, and people are like, John Navarre was a good quarterback. I'm like, that's the point. That's the point.
Right. And no one was saying that when he was here.
John Navarre was a good quarterback. And Spate, I agree with what Brian's saying pretty much. I mean, he's never going to be the sort of perfect pocket presence that you might see from Hanson or Brady.
Can he be John Navarre?
Yeah. He's already better than John Navarre.
Yeah. I mean, he's right there. Mm. And so I'm not feeling the way the general fan base is.
John Navarre was the first team all Big Ten quarterback as a senior. He passed for 7.3 yards in an attempt to Braylon freaking Edwards. And last year, Spate was at 7.7 and did not have Braylon freaking
Edwards. I mean, here's a stat. Now, it's a limited data point at this point, but as I've mentioned in the past, I track this thing, net yards per pass attempt. And it works out year after year after year. At the end of the season, if you measure a team's net yards per pass attempt, you can just track the wins. I mean, that just falls in place every year. And right now, Michigan is plus 3.35. That's offense versus defense and net yards per pass attempt, sack adjusted, which is a Final Four. That's a Final Four level. Now, it's a very limited data point.
Yeah, the three quarterbacks Michigan has played.
I understand that, but it's like the sky is not falling at this point. I mean, the angst about quarterback play, I think, is well overstated.
You know, can we talk about something else? Not Mr. Brightside, but just some other football stuff. Yeah,
let's.
I just want to jump in here because, I mean, how many bad quarterback seasons has Harbaugh had since he got to Stanford. I mean, he had an iffy situation his first year.
The pottery guy.
He had Andrew Luck, so that's probably a no-brainer decision for a while.
Well, he also created the first draft pick in San Diego's history, third-round pick.
Yeah,
guy
San
who
Diego.
Was awesome for them.
You know, pretty decent in San Francisco. I mean, you could question his fourth year with Kaepernick.
Alex Smith, Kaepernick, who's not good enough to be in the NFL.
I don't know enough football to question Jim Harbaugh. I feel like I do know enough football to question a guy maybe like Clay Helton, who somehow put Sam Darnold on the bench for the first 3.5 games last year.
They took him off the bench.
Which is good, but I mean...
Just whooped up on Stanford, too.
It took almost a half for Darnold to make an incomplete pass during that game. Like, how bad could this guy have been in practice at the beginning of last year to not get the job? Maybe he mouthed off. Maybe he's a jerk off. I don't know, but like, I can doubt Clay Helton. I don't know if I can't doubt Jim Harbaugh.
So you're doubting the guy who has the best quarterback in the country?
Yeah, because he sat him on the bench for 3 games last year.
Okay. When he was a freshman.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, no, seriously. No, Brian, seriously, how bad could that guy have been in practice to not win that job?
Well, he could have been throwing interceptions and not understand where people need to be lined up. I mean, that's what happens. Only Mike Hart came out of his mother's body perfectly.
All right, let's get another example. I mean, I have way more trust in Jim Harbaugh to pick quarterbacks than maybe a David Shaw.
That's fine. I'll go with that.
All right, so... There we are in quarterbacks. Right. We talked a lot about quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Well, I will say one other thing, though, is that thank you, Donovan Peoples-Jones, for being the highest jumper on the planet and batting that one ball down, which might have been dangerous if it had gotten over.
Yeah, he should try out for the volleyball team. Yeah. He shouldn't. Don't do that.
That play is a play that you know, goes unnoticed mostly, but it was a...
Well, I appreciated it because everybody remembers the pick six, and I was like, thank you. Good job.
When he went up to just pat that ball down, that was...
Let's go to the phone, 734-998-1050. We'll get a word or two in on defense coming up. We want, certainly want to get you your takes on Air Force. But Don in Ann Arbor. Don, what's up?
Morning, guys. I have a question about scheduling. But first, I think Peoples Jones should receive the first annual Taco Pants Scholarship Award. There's some discussion that I've read that Michigan is trying to get out of the home-and-home with Washington, and I really hope they don't do that. I like the tough schedules myself. I don't flip out if we happen to lose one of those games, but I know a lot of other people do. What is your collective view on whether or not Washington should stay on the schedule?
Why would they not stay on the schedule? Is it? Do they have like two? They have a couple of years coming up where they have two Power Five foes lined up, and you know I think Washington is a perfect one because they're always overrated, except for last year. But for most,
no, but they've actually struggled so far against some pretty bad competition this year.
Where are you hearing that, Don?
I think it's a rumor that is kind of circulating after they broke the Arkansas series. I think people started talking about it, and I think it actually started up in out in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, they broke the Arkansas series to put Notre Dame back on the schedule. Yeah. So if they put Notre Dame back on the schedule again, then that's fine. You know, otherwise,
like, right? You don't want to dump Washington for Western Michigan, but
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard that at all. It doesn't mean it isn't true, but
I haven't heard it either.
I'm slightly skeptical.
But I don't get a lot of we're going to break this contract
talk.
So
So the at Washington is that's the one in 2020, right?
Yeah.
See, my bigger concern with the schedule is that when you look beyond that year and you go to 2020, 2021, et cetera, they have the marquee non-conference game on the road when you have four league home games. So you only end up with six home games on your schedule in the odd number of years. And then in the even number of years, you'll end up with seven or eight home games because you have three non-conference games that will all be at home plus your five conference games.
2020 is a beast. I mean, I could see it because you play. You're going to have Virginia Tech.
They're not going to be good.
You're going to have
why do you think that?
That'll be Josh Jackson. And wouldn't that be his senior year?
In 2020?
2020, yeah. Josh Jackson, senior year. Coming back to Ann Arbor.
He's already going to be in the NFL.
Oh, he's going to leave early? So, I mean, you got at Washington and home against Virginia Tech in a non-conference. Then you open up Big Ten play with home against Wisconsin, home against Penn State, then at Michigan State.
I mean, Michigan State's going to be 2-10 that year probably.
We'll see, but good grief. I mean, I haven't heard anything about wanting to get out of Washington, but I could see it. I could see it making sense.
Man, two real non-conference games. That's awesome.
Well, are
you thinking Jim Harbaugh's backing down from Washington?
No, I don't. I don't think he's back. I don't think you can.
That's what I hear.
You could have three. You can have three straight, you know, top 10 opponents, and Jim wouldn't back down. I'm looking at it from a schedule balance standpoint.
Oh, come on.
You say, oh, come on, all you want. I'm looking at who other teams are playing as well and having your team physically in shape. I mean, these games, these are tough opponents.
Penn State's going to be on probation again.
We can hope. We can hope, right? Let's get another phone call.
New revelations every day.
And talk to Phil in Atlanta. Phil, what's up?
Hey, I don't mind the scheduling. You know, 88 Michigan played Miami and Notre Dame. You know, 97 Michigan played Colorado and Notre Dame. So, you know, Washington and V-Tech, you know, hey, you know, bring it on. But my question pertaining to the offense is, one, of course, I like the offense to go a little bit more up-tempo, but I like to see more screen plays, whether they're Evans, Isaac, or, you know, missing in action, Eddie McDoom. And another thing is, as far as Wilton, do Michigan need to go to more of a three-step drop with him, get the ball out of his hands a lot quicker, or are we just comfortable with the 5-7-step drop? You know, have him, you know, survey the field. I think they need to, you know, do a little bit more quick passes, get the ball out of his hands, and, you know, get him in rhythm that way.
Well, I mean, they are doing a fair amount of that with the five wide stuff. So that's all three-step drop kind of things. And I think they're alternating that with a lot of max protection. And sometimes the max protection actually seems a little excessive to me.
Because we're not getting guys open in max protection.
Like there's guys – there's times when everybody's bracketed because there's only two or three guys in the pattern.
Maybe as they get deeper in the season, they'll feel more comfortable.
I think they're a little uncomfortable with the offensive line. Mm-hmm. But when it's like third and goal from the 10 and you got Zach Gentry staying in, I mean, that's a little weird to me.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just saying a couple thoughts. One is I thought Alessio played, as long as we're talking offense, I thought he played pretty good this week, or better for sure.
Yeah, he was fine.
I thought Nwainu slipped back a bit, and Kugler wasn't as good this week as last, but it was still okay.
Both of those guys had trouble with like twists. Yeah. So most of the pressure Cincinnati generated in this game was when they were swapping defensive linemen, and Nwainu didn't come off, and sometimes that was his fault, and sometimes if he came off, he was just letting a guy hit spate. But I think they had a couple instances late in that game where they had it figured out, so that was good. And Nwainu had a couple of big mental mistakes, so they had like the guards, both of them pull.
Yeah,
that was bad. But when he wasn't making mental mistakes, he was kicking their three tech like 6 yards down the field, not six, 3 yards down the field, often with Elizio. So they were really moving that guy. I was pretty encouraged because Nwainu, I think, had two big mental mistakes, but otherwise he was dominating. So
and Cincinnati's defense is not as bad as they may seem from the results this year. Like, they were 19th in my rush defense rankings last year. They brought back the entire defensive line back too. So it's not like they were playing a MAC team by any means. I think they were playing against more talent than
their
I think
three tech was a second team all conference guy. So he might be a first team all conference guy this year. They weren't beating up on just a mug, but they were beating up on him. So I thought the right side of the line actually were very encouraging. They had the one particular issue, and then they had some, like, I'm a second-year player and a second start stuff.
It wasn't encouraging, and I'm going to say I told you so, was the officiating. We get back to Big Ten officials. I mean, remember I told you last that I didn't think the officiating, all things considered, was that bad in the Florida game, and it wasn't bad at all in the Florida State game when we got the ACC.
This was
an unbelievable. I mean, in the last two games, we have not gotten a single discretionary call from Big Ten refs, zero. But we've had a lot of them, going the other way. I think that Harbaugh is suffering from Mo Wagner's disease.
Okay.
And that
meaning what?
Well, Mo Wagner will never get a call for whatever reason.
That's because he's like an overzealous puppy on defense sometimes.
But some of the calls that are phantom calls that he gets based on reputation.
I agree, but he earned that reputation last year and will hopefully fixes it this year.
I think the referees, if you were able to give him some truth serum, would say part of their criteria for him earning it is his demeanor.
He's annoying.
He whines to them and he complains too much. I think that has something to do with it.
Well, and I think something like that is going on with us in football because this is absurd. Willard's crew is usually not that bad. And this, in this crew, he was a rat.
Yeah, that Rashawn call was horrendous.
There was so much in this game that was bad. And if they just went out and said, "Hey, we ain't calling anything," I could live with that. But that wasn't what was happening.
Well, you get the really kind of ticky-tack pass interference penalty.
Yeah.
And then they come down and they yank Black back, and you don't get that call. It's like, that's what really...
And that was right on Michigan's sideline, too.
That's what really gets me. That's what got me in the Ohio State game was when you had these kind of two calls back-to-back where you got to call both of them or you got to let both of them go.
Right, exactly right. And that ain't happening with us with at least three crews in the Big Ten.
Yeah,
right
and you now. Would think they would do that right on the bench. Anyway, we got to get to a break. 9:45 on a Thursday. When we come back on the other side, I want to get you a few words on defense and then definitely want to get your takes on Air Force. Stay tuned for that, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. You know, I like games of skill, and I consider fantasy football, and you'll appreciate this, Ed. Maybe I need to be consulting you a little bit, try to incorporate, some more variance in my analysis. But I thought I was pretty good in week one. I had Jameis Winston as a quarterback. I had Allen Robinson as a receiver. I'm going to kill it. The young lady across the hallway here from W4 Country, Madison Rally, my team was better than hers. Her team name is Jersey Chaser. That ought to tell you about how much thought she put into picking her team. And she beat me. You know why she beat me?
Well, Jameis didn't play.
Jameis didn't play, so I had to pick up Eli Manning. I pick up, he was like the best guy left. And then you pick him up. Odell Beckham doesn't play. That makes it worse. I have Allen Robinson as one of my top receivers. All he does is go out and blow his ACL in the game. So I lost. That's why I love FanDuel. Because every week is a new season. You have all the players at your disposal. It doesn't matter if Ed has picked Tom Brady. If I want Tom Brady, I can pick him too. It's all about fitting your guys under the salary cap. New contest starting every week. No busted seasons. Something for everyone. Lots of contests to choose from. Starting at just $1. $1 leagues, $2 leagues, $5 leagues and up. They have prize pools anywhere from a few hundred dollars to over $1 million. Right now, I'm still up over about $425 in FanDuel right now, so still doing pretty well. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can as well. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use our code 1050. And new users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com. Sign up with the promo code 1050. Again, that's FanDuel.com, FanDuel.com, promo code 1050, void where prohibited. So, guys, really quickly, the defense – they came out in much the same look that they showed against Florida, kind of changed it up early after that first touchdown drive in the second half, went to more four down up front, seemed to tighten up again. There were a few coverage issues at times that Cincinnati wasn't able to capitalize on, but all in all, anytime you score two touchdowns defensively in a game, to me, that's an outstanding effort.
Yeah, and like what net points that the defense had given up is 3 so far? Is that right?
Yeah, well, depends how you measure it. I mean,
it's actually -4. That's right. Yeah. So that's good. I'm confident in my ability to say that. I mean, I thought that in general, I thought everybody had a pretty good game except maybe Mike McCray, who had some issue on his own drops and got kind of the edge stuff, but. That three-man line thing was still probably about two-thirds of the defense, and you're seeing Michigan look very confident in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Kalik Hudson had a great game. I think Devin Bush had a great game.
Tyreek Kennell is a fast
defense. And the thing about Kennell is, like, Kennell.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about him is that, like, the first tackle he makes on that tunnel screen doesn't look as good as it was on television. Doesn't look as good on television as it was live.
Oh, it was great live. It was a touchdown saving tackle.
It was a touchdown, and he beats a defender, and he beats a blocker, and he gets there. And it's like one of those rare things where I'm like, oh, is that like a +3 tackle from a safety? So he was outstanding, and you have a couple of coverage issues that Michigan needs to clean up. But this is a defense about on par with last year's, I think.
There was a couple of plays where Cincinnati went strong to the boundary side. And they ran a read option to the field side, and it seemed like Winovich and McCray.
Yeah, Winovich got caught inside a couple times.
I mean, and it wasn't clear to me who was supposed to take the pitch and who was supposed to take the quarterback, and they both seemed to be taking the quarterback, and we got caught on, you know.
Well, they did a couple things. They did like a speed option, which like fake looked like a zone read.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get that zone read look, Winovich is like, all right, I'm on the quarterback.
Right, Winovich took the quarterback,
and then you
outside.
Go to the speed option look, and Winovich needs to be on the back. Mm-hmm. So they managed to get in his head for a couple of nice gains. And then on the big long quarterback run on their second touchdown drive, that was a scrape exchange. So McCray's heading out on the back, and he's got that covered, and then Reuben Jones is in the game. He's supposed to crash it on the quarterback. He misses the assignment, and then there's no linebacker level. So the things that went wrong are things that I think Michigan can, for the most part, fix.
What about Air Force? I mean, this is something that we don't see anymore.
We should never schedule Air Force.
We talked about that. I agree completely.
I agree.
But, I mean, it's an old-fashioned triple option out of, what do they call this?
Flex bone.
And where they've got two wing backs essentially, and one guy behind the quarterback, and
we played at Flint Central back in the day.
Is that right? Run the dive, and then the quarterback, so it's a triple option. Michigan ran a variation of it under Shem Beckler, but it's something that you don't see much anymore, and it's hard to defend.
Having the stack in place will help a lot of teams do well with that when they have it. And the last time Michigan played Air Force, they put Jordan Kovacs in a no-win situation. I don't think Don Brown will be that susceptible
to that particular issue. So I think they'll have a better plan of attack. And then, you know, Air Force lost an awful lot on defense. I think that they're going to score some points, but I'd be really surprised if they could hold up.
So Air Force also tends to throw the ball out of their triple option pretty well. They've been, you know, decent in my pass efficiency ratings over the last
couple
years.
They're always going to be decent in pass efficiency ratings.
Well, but, I mean, it's the opposite for Army. I mean, okay. they just can't do anything out of that same type of formation. So look for that. I mean, you know, they're going to try to get chunks of yards downfield, and they've been reasonably successful against, you know, Mountain West competition over the last couple of years.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say, I mean, I've seen some noise on posting boards that you know, two things. One, that Air Force has lost a lot of players, but they're still all a pretty much senior team. No, I mean, it's their system. I mean,
you don't exactly know what you're going to get. But
and the other thing about Air Force is that people are saying, oh, they're small. Well, they're not really a small team. What they are is probably a little slow. And I think that's where Michigan has the advantage. I think Michigan would be a much faster team than Air Force. I don't think the size element is that big of a deal.
Yeah, and we have a guy in Bush who can get sideline to sideline on option stuff. So that'll be a major asset.
Yeah.
Were you guys at all surprised by how handily Oklahoma beat Ohio State?
A little bit.
I mean, I was.
I mean, you weren't. I don't think I was surprised what happened in the second half because Oklahoma really moved the ball pretty well in the first half. But I mean, that was a butt whooping.
220 yards to 90 at halftime in a 3-3 game, and so what happened in the second half seemed relatively predictable. That game wasn't nearly as close as whatever the final was, 31-14. I mean, that was a complete blowout. Mayfield killed them.
And I'm struck by how JT Barrett just does not look anywhere close to the same guy he was when he first
I mean, he's had some injuries.
Well, also, he doesn't have any wide receivers. Remember that their wide receiver coach is a total clown. So
that's true.
So that guy is probably, I don't know, playing video games instead of doing what he's supposed to be doing, and it shows in their wide receiver core.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma's offense is amazing. And
that's a little bit projection, by the way.
Like, I think if you're an Ohio State fan, I think you're more concerned about your offense than your defense after that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that wasn't the case before?
Well, I mean, their defense got gashed, but I just think it's because Oklahoma's really good.
They have an outstanding defensive front, but, you know, that's going to maybe bridge some gaps. Denzel Ward is a sieve out there, but you get enough pressure, you're going to be fine. They're going to get enough pressure in most games. I don't know that they're going to be able to complete downfield passes in most games, though.
Well, and they have pass protection issues, too, that don't seem like they're getting any better.
Yeah, so. Isaiah Prince is still the same guy he was last year, which is a sieve. And Michael Jordan, their true freshman, true sophomore guard, is improved, but not enough. Yeah. So they have offensive line issues.
You know, I think they're pretty much disqualified from the Final Four at this point. I know Ohio State fans don't think so. I know others don't think so. I think so. I think Oklahoma's going to run it out. You're going to have Alabama and Clemson. I think they're done. I think they have almost zero chance of making the Final Four. And so congratulations.
That's strong way to end the show there, Craig.
Craig, if they play like they have the first two games, yeah, I agree with you. But they're not out of the playoff because they haven't even I guess they played one big game.
I mean, we did this after the Virginia Tech game kind of back.
And we'll pick it up. We'll pick up this debate next week, fellas. You know, keep it stored away. Save some for next time.
Better than